Mediated conversation on SAFM.
Okay, it says here simply in front of me, it's mediated conversation, zamazamas. Normally there's a whole host of information, but that information has been hitting us quite hard over the last week or so. And somebody who's, been experiencing it firsthand is Andy Mashaile, Interpol Turnback Crime Campaign Ambassador, also from the area of the West Rand. Andy, is that right? Andy's not there yet. We'll get hold of Andy in a moment. Is Andy there? Sorry, WhatsApp call. Sorry. Hello, Andy. How's it? You're from that area, right? No, we don't have Andy. Is Andy around? No, we don't see. We'll get Andy in just a moment. And this is going to be an interactive one. So I'd like to get your calls as well. So if you'd like to get into conversation with Andy Mashaile, you can give us a call, 011-714-2006. That's the number to dial, and we can have a little interactive mediated conversation today. And if you have any questions, there are a couple of questions that have come through on Twitter and on WhatsApp as well. So I'll put that to Andy. But let's see if we got him there. Andy, you're from the West Rand there, right? All right, doesn't seem like Andy's listening or can hear us. I can't hear Andy. So we'll try and get him on the phone. While we're doing that, can we take a couple of voice notes? Let's lead into this with some of the voice notes that have come through so far. You can get a hold of us on 0614 104 107. Somebody wants to know why Zai doesn't talk about Brad Binder. Okay, noted. We'll talk about Brad Binder this afternoon. On that conversation that Bram Moro was talking about identifying criminals by their country, Lindiwe says country foreigners must be identified because we have, for example, Kenyans who never bring shame to Kenya. It's Lindiwe's view, and we'll take some more views on that. All right, let's try a good old phone line. Andy Mashaile joins us. Andy, how's it going?
John, I'm blessed. It's good to be back with you, the heavyweight champion.
You're from the West Rand, that kind of area in Kagiso, eh?
I was born and bred in Bekkersdal. I grew up spending time at Kagiso, Motlakeng, that whole triangle area, yes.
What was it like when you were there? Was there this problem?
Having had been born and bred in this area, John, one of the mines, Kuktu shaft, was established in 1978. And from then, fast forward to the 2000s, some of the mine shafts were closed, or the operations were closed. Mm. And as a result of that, you saw people coming through from other provinces, other countries, coming through to wreak havoc with regards to the abandoned mining shafts. In particular, the three shafts around Bekkersdal, Kuk 1, Kuk 2, Kuk 3, surrounding the community. And having spent time with my mother there the last 2-3 months, visiting my mother, sleeping over, I have heard gunshots, not ordinarily small firearm calibers, but heavy caliber guns being shot at night by these strange and foreign people who came, to extract gold from these abandoned mines. And also, John, having had realized that in the inability to make sure that they get the gold, they would steal the infrastructure and sell it to scrapyards.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. There are a host of mines, or there were a host of mines, just south of the Witwatersrand itself. So it was, the mines were kind of between Soweto and Roodepoort, I guess, heading down in that crescent area. Those mines stopped being productive for big gold mine companies. What did the big mine companies do when they left those mines?
They left unceremoniously. They never consulted the communities around. Also, the issue of environmental rehabilitation, which is what you're not talking about. You're talking about the safety and security of those mining shafts. And secondly, also speaking about zamazamas coming from all over the world, seeing an opportunity to can go down the shaft or the tailings, mine tailings, dumpings, and to ensure that they get what will make them rich at the end of the day. This has created a serious problem because You have seen people from other countries coming into this specific area and creating havoc, raping and killing people.
Okay, before we get into that, I want to continue talking about the mines. So it's not productive for the mine company, so individuals can go down. Are there still little pieces of gold in a gold seam underground that they are chipping out, what, with little hammers?
My research has advised me and educated me to the effect that there is a lot of gold in those mines. The reason why some of those mines were abandoned is because they got flooded. There was flooding from the underground streams. And now these guys would go in there to harvest the nuggets of gold and process them underground. That's actually what we call the underground economy, George. John, that's going on.
Okay, so it all happens underground. There are these big holes that have been dug and been exploded over many, many years, and they're doing everything under the ground there.
Yes, that's what happens. Believe it or not, when these mines were still operational, some of the mining employees created a problem in that they took money from the Zamazamas. They took money from the Zamazamas, and they could not, at the end of the day, they could not stop the excessive number of Zamazamas underground, leading to the employees of the mines stopping, the operation stopping, because the mine or the mining companies was losing more money to the Zamazamas than the real operations.
Andy, when I think of a mine, I think of a big hole in the ground that goes down for a kilometer. How are they getting into the ground?
They use the same shaft. They pay this security guard who was the gatekeeper, and they work with the officials, and they get into the shaft. They go as if that they went down as if they were employees of the mine.
Okay.
Now, when the mine got abandoned and operations stopped, you find them having a good knowledge of the operations of the mine and going down there using ropes instead of the shaft that people would be squeezed into to go to underground.
Okay, so these could very well be ex-mine employees, underground workers, who are now out of work because the mine is closed, and they say, well, there's still gold down there. I'm going to go take advantage while I can. Andy?
Yes, some of them would be ex-mining employees. But let me give you this picture. Majority of the Zamazamas are the Basotho nationals, followed by the Mozambican nationals, followed by the Zimbabwean nationals.
We've heard a lot about the Basotho. Why specifically are so many Basotho coming in and becoming illegal miners?
My big brother, this thing started off in 2010 in the East Rand, ERPM. If you remember that instance and the fighting at King's Way in Springs, and them coming through to Roodepoort, spending time there by Roodepoort and moving to West Village from... originally, they were from Bloemfontein. You remember when one of the hostels there was a hub, a den of illegal gold processing institution. And they came through here because Gauteng obviously is concentrated with a lot of mines. And the lifespan of those mines, due to a number of reasons, came to a halt. So they provided an opportunity for a lot of the Basotho people, because most of them get employed as shaft sinkers. They are the ones who lead mining operations, digging deeper into the belly of the earth, so that mining operations can happen at the backdrop of them having created those tunnels that would then be followed by proper explosions down there, so that gold can be extracted.
Okay, let's talk about the criminality. Obviously, an illegal miner is a criminal because they're doing it illegally. But the other crimes that they keep being accused of, are all Zamazamas criminals in another way as well, have you found?
Yeah, extracting gold without a license is a criminal offense.
Yeah.
One. Two, coming into the country without the necessary documentation is a crime. Three, working and extracting gold and selling it illegally is also a criminal offense. The point that I wanted to make, point number three, was they make money and they don't pay SARS. Obviously, because of its illicit money, it won't go into the banks because they don't have bank accounts.
Yeah.
That gold or the illicit gold or minerals find their way ultimately to Dubai, towards Dubai, which is one of the key areas that government should engage with in terms of the purchase of this illegal gold from the gold smugglers in our country.
Okay, well, maybe you misunderstood the question. We're hearing about they're very violent people, the Zama Zamas. They're carrying large rifles, and they're criminals as well. Are you finding that all of them are like that?
Yeah, all of them are like that. Remember, you can't be a member of a gang and not carry the principles that drive the gang. Simply put, when we carry guns, you must also carry a gun if you are in that gang. So that at the end of the day, when we are attacked, we all take a chance at shooting at the police, which is what they did at the Takhiso, if you remember, a few days ago, and they were knocked out or they were made to meet their maker by the police officer.
And
it's not only that. They do this to ordinary members of the community, pickpocketing, robbery, going into churches. It happened in Bekazdal. The past weekend, not this weekend that we're coming from, they went into a church, shot and killed two people and robbed people of cell phones. I mean, if this can happen daylight in a church, it means these guys are very violent and they mean business.
My guest is Andy Mashaila, Interpol Turnback Crime Campaign Ambassador. Let's go to Billy in Polokwane. Hi, Billy.
How are you, Steve?
It's John, but go ahead.
Oh, John Roku.
Okay.
Look, we are victims of our own success in South Africa. We've got good labor laws. The problem is what? It's the countries around us which are suffering from poverty and other crises of their own. Now, the mine bosses have put the government into their own projects. They allow these people to come and work in our farms, in our mines, and in our houses. Because this is a cheap labor for them. This is an orchestrated move by the mine bosses. They just declare these mines unprofitable and they let these people mine. And where do these people take the same products? The same bosses. And we sell that at the very cost effective prices. We here in Limpopo, we've got some mines which are being declared unprofitable, like Bukoni and others.
Mm-hmm.
But to our surprise, they are not putting money in there, effectively so, illegally. And when you go to the department, you ask them, what is happening there? No one asks. Why? They know who's doing what. The police are part of these things, politicians are involved, and we are on our own. Where should we go?
Okay.
The people who take it upon themselves to fight these illegal miners. Thank you very much.
All right, Billy. I'm going to ask you in a moment, Andy, who's involved. Let's just see what Erwin has to say. Erwin's in Klebecha. Hi, Erwin.
Good morning, John.
Go ahead.
John, I share a slightly different context on the legality of the miners. You know, these people are trying to sustain themselves. You know what the economics of that they are. But now they are being vilified, you know, and I've got no evidence to suggest that these are false accusations against them. But from my perspective, no government wants anybody to sustain itself. Whether it's water, where soon we will be taxed on our water tanks, you sustain yourself. Soon we will be taxed on your solar systems and all that. Now, just because these Zamas are not paying tax, they are actually illegal. Now, what I'm saying is all governments are proxy governments of Queen Elizabeth and her reptilian family. Now, they are being controlled from the top. And they can't do what is best for the people, and that's all I want to say.
You had me at one point, Owen, but then you lost me a lot, but that's okay. Andy, I want to know who's involved, Andy Mashaile. accusations of police involvement, government involvement, it goes higher. Obviously, there's some sort of police involvement because these crimes are not being shut down. How high does it go when it comes to Zama Zamas?
My big brother, I have heard those allegations. I haven't seen anyone, any police member being arrested and trialed and convicted for being involved in the Zama Zamas. I always like to talk facts and not hearsay or fairy stuff.
Okay.
I have heard that they are involved at grassroots level. When the Zama Zamas make a lot of money and they are arrested, I am told, it is alleged, or rumor has it that they take money from the Zama Zamas and they protect them. If people say to me, you live a born and bred in this area, you are on the N12, 40 Strom interchange, you are walking, you are driving towards Carlton Beach, and here are 200 men walking in a file of two lines, and cars have to stop. These people go across the freeway or go across the road, and ordinary drivers, you have to retreat. It means something. Don't the police know about this in the local area? And if they don't know, but they get this information, what are they doing about it? If they don't know, why is it that they don't know? Because a crime intelligence would obviously know that this kind of a thing from the engagements with communities. If their response is negative to all of the two questions, then I want to come to a conclusion that says leadership at a local police station level is not doing what is expected to do. Hence the allegations of involvement in crime. Those allegations would need to be tested by the leadership and the management at the station. Secondly, when members of the community bring it up to your attention, if it has come to my attention, I am definitely sure that station commanders in these areas that I've mentioned know about it. The question is, what are they doing about it? At district level, what are they doing about it? At provincial level, at national level. I'm happy to say in the district where I was born and bred, there's a general, they're called Fred Kekan, a Major General Fred Kekan. On top of things, rushing, ensuring that crime does not happen in the area, overwhelmed by the number of criminals in this particular area. But we have seen action that came from the last 2 weeks. It was his members, subs members in this district that made sure that those Zama Zamas are arrested. Before I get off this point, I would like to invite your second caller to come and pitch camp in the community where I was born and bred, Bekazdal, Mohlakeng, Kagiso, so that he can be able to understand. You're not vilifying people because they pay tax. You're vilifying people because they commit a criminal offense.
Yeah.
Going into West Village and killing people is a criminal offense.
All right, Andy, don't go away. We're going to wrap this up in just a moment. We just got to take a quick break for Rob to give us the latest traffic.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
7 minutes to wrap up this conversation about illegal mining in the Gauteng area in particular. Mediated conversation with Andy Mashaile, Interpol Turnback Crime Campaign Ambassador. Let's go to a call quickly. Let's go to Keith in Nelspruit. Hi, Keith.
Well, good.
Look.
They by Pilgrim's Rest. The Lesotho's are in charge there. They sit there by the holes with guns, and they got the South Africans working for them. The South Africans work for a plate of ore. The rest the Lesotho's take.
And what do the police do about it?
Absolutely nothing. I actually know one policeman that is involved. But that I won't talk because then I'm in trouble.
All right. Keith and Nelspruit saying it's happening.
Okay.
Happening out in Mpumalanga as well. Andy Mashaile, let's try and find solutions to the problem. Besides police going in for a week and arresting hundreds of people, what else can be done?
When these abandoned mines don't have people who are responsible for them, the community around there, let's take Kagiso and Bekazdal to be more specific. Those shafts that have been abandoned, the community should be given those mines, so that the community in that area, the South African community, can then be able to make use of those mines. You will go in there with policing, guns blazing, arrest people and go away and they will come back. When the communities, the Kagiso people and the outlying areas, they own those mining dumps and those tailing dams, and the people get employed by themselves as a community. Government helps them to set up a cooperative, provides them with a license, rents a machine for them. 6 months or 12 months later, the people pay for those machines, rent to buy, and they continue mining operations. That's one way of ensuring that you don't have crime. And the police will then be able to come in to give backup to the security of the community,
right,
that would have been employed or set up to ensure that there is security around that business that belongs to the community. Mining companies have been very arrogant in this country. They just came in and leave, even without rehabilitating those mines, and creating a problem like in the community that I was born and bred. A 16-year-old was kidnapped, raped and killed. This is 2 months ago. That young lady or that young woman, during Women's Month, as we are speaking, was murdered by allegedly these Basotho people. So give the mine to the communities around. The mining hostels that were around the mine, if I can invite you, my big brother, to come and see, have been brought down by members of the community, stealing the bricks one by one and building houses illegally so in the particular area, in those particular areas. So long story short, can the mines, mine dumps and everything else for rehabilitation, give them to the community, because the communities around there never benefited from those mines, directly and indirectly.
It does come down to security, though. It's all very well giving it to the community, but if 100 criminals rock up with big guns and rifles, it doesn't help that the community has it, because the criminals will just take over from there.
You have ex-police, ex-SAPS members who are colonels, some of them who are highly skilled, highly trained. Mm. You have security companies. You have your former non-statutory forces members who are unemployed, be them from MK, Azanla, you mentioned them, Porto. You have guys who have the expertise from other communities, South African communities, who can set up a security company, co-ops, who apply with the necessary authorities, get better firearms, get drones to police the area, use technology to police those areas. When they get given to the community, the element of safety and security would then come in. Some of us would be able to give free advice. Some of us would then be able to ask the Minister of Police, the National Commissioner, and all other experts in safety and security to establish those security companies and ensure that the wealth revolves in the community. Right now, the gold that gets out of these mines, where does it go? It goes to other areas, we are told, that places like Dubai. And we have to stop that illicit selling of gold to other countries.
Okay, so it's a three-pronged attack at the moment, the way I understand it from you, Andy. We got the mines companies should be challenged to rehabilitate the mines, shut them down as best they can. Give what's left there to the communities and keep them safe. That's probably three prongs there already. And then the outflow of the gold. Do we know how the gold gets from an illegal miner who's filthy dirty to the market?
The illegal miner who's filthy dirty sells to a guy in a black BMW somewhere in a community A. That guy in a black BMW, be it a 750 or a 050, takes it to the goldsmith somewhere else in the big city of Johannesburg or the big city of Bloemfontein, and that gentleman collects from left, right, and center, puts it in a container, ships it off to Dubai and all those other countries where copper also ends up. Copper ends up in China for the gadgets that they are using. This is the information that we have received. I've been doing research. I've been focusing a lot of my time from the 10 Bad Crime campaign, studying the method of operation. So I gave you the method of operation. Ultimately, the guys in Dubai give the intermediary a lot of money. The intermediary gives to the one below him. The one below him ends up giving the Zama Zama the 100,000 or the 200,000 or 250,000. And this becomes lucrative. Criminals now have created an illegal economy or an underground economy. I just wanted, before we shut up, I wanted to tell you, a loaf of bread that went underground or that used to go underground would be sold at $500, a loaf of bread. And they would squash that loaf of bread and put it in the gumboot. Your ordinary bread and 50,000. And this becomes lucrative. Criminals now have created an illegal economy or an underground economy. I just wanted, before we shut up, I wanted to tell you, a loaf of bread that went underground or that used to go underground would be sold at $500, a loaf of bread. And they would squash that loaf of bread and put it in the gumboot. Your ordinary popcorns that you see at Bodmin Township, that small packet was selling at a certain stage at 250. That small little packet. So you have a whole underground economy where people benefit illicitly and criminally. So.
Andy Mashiile, we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Interpol Turnback Crime Ambassador joining us here on SAFM Sunrise. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you very much for joining us as well. Kathy's up next. Time for the news at 9.